Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. It's the 5 o'clock fire.
Ah, it is 5 o'clock. Congratulations. Hopefully you're off work. Luckily for you, we have the latest, and the latest is Clint Sterner. He is out today, but luckily for you, old Spo and the Dilf.
The big Dilf.
Psycho T slash T-Mill are in the building for you. And first and foremost, 5 o'clock fire is brought to you by Kirk Holmes. And good news, as the Astros, they were able to win those final two games of the series. More good news coming. Here is Joe Espada, the manager, giving an update and timeline on his ace, at least one of his aces, Justin Verlander.
So he's going to throw his side tomorrow, and if that goes well, he'll pitch this weekend in Washington.
Based on what you heard from him and others, what are you thinking about?
He's in a good spot. He's in a good spot. He feels good. He's feel confident. He wants to contribute. He knows that we need him on the mound. We need his presence, and right now he's right where he needs to be.
I will not minimize how big a deal this is for the Astros. And you've covered sports for a long time. You've covered baseball in particular. Tyler, you've covered sports, watched it. I have. Many of you listening, you have watched it and probably covered it for free yourself. There is something about, one, having a guy that everybody believes in back on the mound. Nobody believed in Blair Henley. Is it Blaine or Blair?
Blair.
Blair, right? Nobody believed in Blair. I mean, it's all right to the kid. They may lie. Nobody believed in him. People are shaky. Tonight with Spencer Arrighetti. Let's just be honest. Not proven. This dude right here walks in the door. There's mentally a deep breath of, all right, our dude is back in here. Our dude is, and I think he's more of our dude on the pitching staff than anybody. Our dude is back. I know he gave up six runs in his first rehab start. He had a rough one yesterday too. He had a rough game yesterday as well. That don't matter. Rehab, whatever. Sugarland, Corpus. Their guy is back. And I think for them, mentally, that is huge for a group. This is a dude they've won championships with. This is a dude that at the very end of it was the guy that they went to with the speech when they won the ALCS, when they went to the ALCS for the seventh straight time. Like, this is their dude. I think it is a very, and I don't think you underrate it, I think it is a very, very big deal that he is back in that clubhouse.
I wouldn't worry about the stats from the minor league games. Frankly, they don't really matter in a rehab game. The goals are very different for the pitcher and for the hitter in that sort of a situation. So don't worry about that. The other thing that is important when it comes to Verlander, you look at what happened last week. Henley gets chased in the first inning in Arlington. Arrighetti had the short start on Wednesday in Kansas City. Hunter Brown gets chased in the first inning on Thursday in Kansas City. And then J.P. France has the short start on Friday against the Rangers. The thing that Verlander does is that he is going to give you innings every time out. You don't have to worry about your starting pitcher getting chased in the first inning and throwing your bullpen underwater when he's on the mound, because he's going to give you a professional outing. He might get roughed up every now and then, but he is still going to give you those innings, and he's going to save your bullpen. And I've gone back to this many times before. I think one of the most important starts that Justin Verlander had for the Astros was a loss. It was Game 5 of the ALCS in 2019, where they had no off days. There were no off days from games at the end of that series because of a rainout at Yankee Stadium. Justin Verlander gave up 3-4 runs in the first inning. He still gave them 7. It saved the bullpen for the next night when they had a bullpen game against the Yankees back here in Game 6. They were able to win that game because he helped save the bullpen. That's the sort of stuff that guys like Justin Verlander do. They give you a professional outing every single time.
No, I'm with you. And damn sure better than the combination of, you know, Blair Henley and Spencer Arrighetti and what Hunter Brown has given you and what J.P. France has given you. When you add him in and take one of those out, that is a change. That is a change of things, because you could have, you know, these three guys, him, Blanco, and Javier going right now, more than half your rotation, and you could feel like you got a real chance every night. I just I think they have lost a lot of leaders in this locker room. Say what you want to say about Maldonado, but he was a huge leader in this locker room. Correa was a huge leader in this locker room. Springer was a huge leader. They've lost a lot of guys. Brantley, off just last year, Maldonado and Brantley. They lost Dusty, a big voice that they trusted and a leader in that locker room. So I'm sure there's some people out here saying it's clubhouse, whatever. But you bring in this guy, and I just think the belief that he brings to this group is something that is a big, big deal. A big, big deal. Let alone his performance, right? I mean, he's gonna at the very least, you would think, consistently flirt with quality start.
Ver's gonna be Ver.
These next three guys in this Atlanta Braves series, I'd almost be willing to put money that none of them have a quality start. six innings, three runs. I don't have very good confidence at all. This is a guy that does that routinely, at least flirt with it. So Verlander potentially back against the Nationals this weekend. If you had to guess, he would start when?
Friday
against the Washington Nationals. So that is big, big news. Now, Jose Urquidy, who we heard was throwing today, Framber Valdez, he wasn't a part of that, was he?
He was. He ended up being. He wasn't supposed to be, but he was feeling good today, so he did some light catch work.
Which is, again, he said he was going to play catch on Tuesday, tomorrow. So, obviously, he's feeling good. And he said yesterday that he would not need a live BP or rehab start. So, if all goes well,
is that what he said?
If everything went well today, then he could maybe be back as soon as this weekend also. That's probably pushing it a little too much, but at least on the road trip.
Yeah, we'll see here. So, things starting to look better. Jose Urquidy throwing the ball. Things are starting to look better. Potentially with this Astros rotation.
Justin Verlander.
5 o'clock fire.
All right, they host the Braves tonight, and this is a tough, tough series when you look at what they have on the mound and what the Braves can put forth with their lineup and their offense. It's arguably the best offense, the best lineup in baseball when they're rolling in. Their best player isn't even swinging the bat great right now, arguably the best player in the league, at least hitter, in Ronald Acuna. But with Spencer Arrigetti, they're going to need to score some runs. You just want to assume that. This doesn't feel like a...
It's not going to be a
2-1 ball game for them. But Altuve, who is swinging the bat crazy.
Best start of his career.
Yes, he is swinging the bat crazy, followed by Yordan, Alvarez, Tucker, Bregman, Diaz, McCormick in left. He's back in the lineup. Pena, Abreu, and then Dubon is in the lineup. That is what they're going to run out there. And this is maybe the best lineup. I guess John Singleton has been swinging the bat better than Jose Abreu, because hell, who hasn't? But this feels like the best lineup they can put forth right now. And I mean, they got to score runs tonight and in the rest of this series.
I agree. It would be helpful. Scoring runs is helpful.
Hey, where are you on the lineup and how it's constructed? Where are you on this with? Because I've heard a lot of people who want Yordan to be moved back down. I just love these three guys at the top in a row, potentially putting pressure on it immediately. And I just feel like if you give these guys in this lineup those opportunity and chances with runners in scoring position, except for maybe Jose Abreu, it will ultimately pay off.
There are arguments for and against it, and to be honest with you, I don't care. I just people blaming the lineup construction for why they were struggling with runners on base, to me that's pretty disingenuous. I don't think that's why they were struggling with runners on base. I think that sometimes that just happens. At the same time, I do think there is some value to sticking somebody like Jeremy Pena second in the lineup, because it does, in a sense, it props him up a little bit, because you should be able to see better pitches if you're batting between Jose Altuve and Yordan Alvarez. But at the same time, you would like to get Yordan Alvarez up there as much as possible. So, like, the Dodgers are doing the same thing. The Dodgers are having Betts, Freeman, and Ohtani bat 1-2-3, and they've been fine. So I just, again, I get the argument for both sides. I don't care which way they go with it, though.
For me, I just think Alex Bregman, and especially Alex Bregman, wherever you hit him, and Diaz and really Pena, who it's been, they're going to come up with runners in scoring position. Like, several times, if Alvarez wasn't hitting second, the Astros wouldn't have scored, you know, in some of these games. He's come up with runners in scoring position, right? Like nobody is wanting to move Altuve out of the leadoff spot, even though the way he's swinging the bat, he may be the best in driving in runs, right? Nobody says, oh, well, shoot, he's been sitting down here with Abreu and Jake Myers at times in front of him. No, I just think Bregman's going to have to drive in runs, and he'll have opportunities in the second spot. He's going to have opportunities in the fourth spot. Like he's going to have to drive in runs. So, I mean, that to me is a situation where it's like, yo, man, they let's just calm down. I just love those three guys together. I hated the times where Kyle Tucker's batting fifth. That was annoying.
Or even Yordan Alvarez would be batting fifth at times last year.
I didn't.
Like, you want your best guys to get as many plate appearances as possible. So, I get that. In the same, though, along those lines, I also understand by you want to maybe spread them out a little bit to maybe you feel like you lengthen out your lineup, but whatever. Just score runs. Like, everybody does their job, you're going to score runs.
Text line, Tyler. Ron, you were the biggest advocate of running Maldonado and Brantley out of town.
Okay.
I wonder how many people would be confused to say that I was the biggest person trying to run Maldonado out of town.
Like we like to say, people hear what they want to hear sometimes.
People were mad at me because I rolled with Dusty on the situation.
Yeah.
That was someone tweeted me over the weekend, like, you wanted Dusty gone. I said, Dusty Baker?
The guy with the brisket gloves?
Me? I think maybe you're confusing me with somebody else.
Maybe.
Dusty Baker.
Just maybe.
5 o'clock fire.
All right, D'Amico Ryans, he spoke to the media today. And listen, D'Amico, and we'll talk about this here in a second. The Big Three spoke today. But D'Amico spoke on Stephon Diggs, and I thought it was interesting, in particular, him speaking on his confidence of what they're going to get, what kind of Stephon Diggs they're going to get. Here was D'Amico on his confidence in the production from his new wide receiver, Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, again, when we watch the tape on Stephon and the playmaker that he is, right, we always go back to the tape and we look at a player in totality. We don't look at, you know, this amount of weeks or that, those weeks. We look at the entire season. We look at the guy's entire career and what he's done, how he's been productive. The guy's been an all-pro player. He's been a Pro Bowl player, over 1,000 yards for multiple seasons. So we're excited about adding Diggs to our team.
All right, that was D'Amico talking about his potential for production.
Can I ask a question real quick?
Yeah, I was 16. It was a Ford Escape. Not my best work, but
I'm going to let that sit there for a bit.
Oh, when everyone says, can I ask you a question, I automatically think they're talking about my first time.
I was not asking about that.
Sorry, actually. Go ahead.
Why? Can somebody explain why Stephon Diggs' production fell off the way that it did last year? Is it just the offensive coordinator?
I wonder what they saw in the tape.
When D'Amico said that, that's the first thing that comes to my mind. Okay, you saw the tape, but why was the production not there?
And you might already know this, Spobe, just to give the listener a little background, too. The question asked before that cut, they referenced specifically his quick start last season, but then Diggs dropping off the back half of the year.
So that was 13 ball games when you had the two playoff games included in that, when he said we looked at the tape.
So did he address the production fall off in that answer?
You know he wasn't going to address that.
I'm just making sure.
Look at the whole career, Spo.
Back of the baseball card?
Now, hold on. Now, that part I completely disagree with, and I don't think that he means that. All right. Right, like we can look at the whole career on some players, but there's some players that, hey, he's 31 years old. We're not going to keep looking at the whole career.
We don't right? like that.
Like, listen, I know we could look at Adrian Peterson's whole career, but we're not bringing him back now.
Yeah.
As we look at his whole career, like some of that early stuff, you got to kind of look at more the current when you got a guy that's turning 31. Listen, as I've said, I think it is absolutely worth the risk. And I think especially when he's coming here with C.J. Stroud, this style of offense with Bobby Slowick and the two other guys around him. But that one is a serious thing. Like, and I know we have been ones that have talked about it and guilty of it on this show, but I think more of the conversation, not just with us, but overall with Stephon Diggs, is the what's going to happen, you know, sideline antics, that, like, what he adds, and not as much to, hey, Doug. Like, basically, man, they didn't need you in those last seven games that they went off on that run. I mean, not that that's unfair that they didn't need you. I'm sure some of the coverage he helped other guys get open without the attention people were placing on him. But there is some deal of, yo, boss, I know that they changed and became more James Cook-centric and ran the ball more. That don't mean a number one receiver was under 35 yards six different times.
At least give me 100-yard game.
Like you didn't have 100. You haven't had 100-yard gain since October 15th. I think more of it's made of the outside stuff, and I'll say we're guilty of that too, than the production part. So I think that is, once again, I think it is worth the risk, and I think there are still things, as they probably see on tape, where you can say, with the three guys, we can really create something. But someone turning 31 years old, if you just took the name and you said it out loud, I got a guy who's turning 31 years old in the middle of this season who has been really, really good. The last 13 games of the season, he dropped off a damn cliff. And the last image we have of him is a potential to make a big play in a playoff game against the Chiefs at home, and there's a deep ball that his quarterback puts right on the money and it goes through his hands. Like, there would be a different feel. Again, I think it is worth the risk. All right, the new Big Three in Houston. The new Big Three in Houston. We'll discuss that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hubley.
All right, welcome back in. As Adam Spolane is in the building, Clint will be back in tomorrow. And the Big Three spoke today. That's what they should be, the new Big Three. And that's on the field, obviously. The McNair family with Cal and Hannah at the top with this organization, and then Nick Caserio. But in terms of the Big Three on the field, D'Amico Ryan's the head coach. C.J. Stroud, the quarterback, and then Will Anderson. Those were the three who spoke today. And when I was listening to In the Loop, and if you want to catch everything all three of them had to say, you can listen to it In the Loop. They were on earlier today. You can go to the podcast page and listen to that after the show. But when I listened to that, fellas, I couldn't help but to think, you know, in a lot of organizations, there are the untouchables. The untouchables, and we give them different names, like the core, or these are the guys, or some teams call them, the Yankees call them?
Core four.
The core four. Some teams call them the loosey-goosey. Like, each team has, you know, their core. And it feels like those three are the guys that I almost could guarantee in 5 years. And 5 years in the NFL is a long time. They'll all be here. There's no way any of those three are gone. Hell, I'd even push it to closer to 10. Just injuries and stuff, but those guys weren't. I think, potentially for me, I think anybody else on the roster could come or go. And I'm talking about as high profile to the Tunzels, to the Titus Howards, to the Nikos, Tank, Danielle Hunter, you know, any of these guys, I think I think this is it. I think these three are the core here that they, everything kind of circles around that you know are going to be here. I think there are maybe some guys that are close, but I think these are the ones that will be here. And I don't think it's an accident at all that these are the three that spoke today. I bet you that coming up this year, this will be the kind of grouping when we would hear from Bill O'Brien, and then we'd hear from Deshaun Watson, and then we'd hear from J.J. Watt. I bet you this is what we see moving forward with this three. And I like, for me, I just, there aren't, there isn't anybody else on this team that I think fits that. That I could legitimately say in the next 5 years, like, I without a shadow of a doubt believe, I know they're going to be here. I think this grouping right here, and we see with a lot of teams, right? I think the Chiefs, Andy Reid, Mahomes, and Travis Kelce. Those are their core. The 49ers maybe a little bit different. I think probably Fred Warner is somebody that jumps in there for them that they really, really believe in, along with Kyle Shanahan.
Debo.
And maybe Debo Samuel. Yeah, they made it a fact to make sure they kept him in state and made him stay. We see it with a lot of different teams. I think this is the three.
I would add one more. And it's not an accident, like you said, these are two guys that were picked. You know, C.J. Stroud was picked second overall last year. Will Anderson was picked third overall. They are both terrific personalities. Like, they are, you know, they are guys who...
They're everything that they want. That,
those are
them
guys
to be
that
you, about.
Yeah, you want those guys to be the face of your organization. I would also throw Derek Stingley in there. Mm. I think that from a talent standpoint, he is right up there with them. Again, draft pedigree also with the third overall pick, and everything that I saw last year when he was on the field, and again when he was on the field is a big part of it. But he played at a very high level. So that's why, and he plays a position that you need to have. He plays a very important position that, with the way the league is played right now, is a premium position. So to me, I think those three, plus D'Amico, they should be on that same level.
Derek Stingley. You add Derek Stingley to that list, Tyler? You can definitively believe that in the next 5 years, he's going to be here.
I could see it. I think I'm hesitant to add him, but I can see where Spo's logic is. I think I put Stingley right on this outer tier if we're doing this.
Yeah.
Sting right there on that outer tier with guys the likes of a Tank Dell, who I just need to see a little more from. On a shortened sample size as rookie year. Nico Collins, who I need to see another great season from, I'd say he's there too. I think there's a handful of these young guys that you can put just right on the outside of it.
Because you bring up the point, and to the point you're making with what Spo had to say, Tyler, the draft slot of him being third overall, just like as high as those other two, makes a big deal. The thought is I would... You draft a kid third, you want
better
to
be a star.
You want him to be a star, and you want to bring him back for a second contract.
You're a Tiger, but now you're a Texan, man.
But I just don't trust him the way that I trust the other two. Like, I don't trust him to stay on the field. Like, I've gotten to a point where I say, if Derek Stingley is healthy, he is a legit above average starting corner in the league. If he's healthy, but the health part is a big deal. And, you know, we've seen teams, like some teams keep corners, but we've seen teams roll on from corners. We've seen teams trade corners. Like, I could see themselves saying, all right, we know we are going to give CJ and Will the bag a year after potentially we can give the bag to Stingley. Or a year or two that we can give the bag to Stingley. God, he's got this injury situation. He's been hurt from time to time. Like, I can see the scenario in which they say we maybe move off of Stingley. And I understand the position, the premium position. Like, to me, if he has another year where he misses a major chunk of the season, that the trust level is hard to go there. And that is clearly up in the air to me. And like, he's a quiet kid, and everybody doesn't have to be leader. But these two dudes not only are performing on the field, they are everything, your voice that you want him to be in the locker room. That's why I just feel like he is different. Hell, I almost put Christian Harris as much in that area. I feel like he's like gonna be playing a position where he is a major voice in that linebacker part. Where I can see him here for the next, 5 years potentially, as much as I could see a Derek Stingley.
I think if you draft a guy third overall and don't give him the second contract, I think that's bad. Like, that's kind of the pick is in a sense a bust if that happens. From what I saw from Stingley when he played, again, the when he played is the important part of that sentence, but he came back from the hamstring and he was fine the rest of the season. Like, oh, that matters.
Big time, yeah.
That matters. Yes. So now, if he goes through another season where he misses six games, well, then the conversation changes. But if he plays 15, 16 games next season at the same level he played this year, then I think he is forefront in that conversation.
Yeah, he's part of the core.
So yeah. I understand the hesitancy with you wanting to put him in there, but I'm looking at it as, man, this guy is really good. They took him third overall. He was one of the best corners in the league when he was healthy last year. If he puts together another year like that, he's a star.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's big time. Somebody, a couple of people are saying we should add a couple more to that list. We'll finish that off as well. We'll finish this conversation off about this big three. Should there be room for more? And the Rockets season ended. The Rockets season ended, and there is one major, major, major question. Major question that needs to be answered going into next season. We'll discuss that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, someone said we're talking about the core. The core three, and I don't think it was an accident who spoke. And these guys, I think, are the guys that are going to be here unless something really bad happens. There may be a lot of different coaches, a lot of different players that revolve around, but I think the untouchables right now, they will do whatever they have to do to re-sign these guys, to make these guys happy, to keep on this team, and that is D'Amico, C.J. Stroud, and Will Anderson. And I know Adam said he would add Derek Stingley to that list. Someone texted in and said they would add Tank to that list. Tank Dell, barring the injuries. Yeah, I can't go with that one. I mean, I would, if I'm not adding Nico, I don't think Tank has shown enough to just be like untouchable. Like a guy that you're gonna sign no matter what the hell happens. I don't think that is the case. I mean, one, I think he plays a position where you can find different, you may find different options, find different ways to move around and do something else. I think Tank's really, really good. I'm not saying he can't and won't be here. I think he does have a great connection with the quarterback, but I wouldn't put him in that come hell or high water. Like right now, we know they're going to sign C.J. Stroud. We know they're going to sign Will Anderson. There's not a guarantee with anybody else to me. Somebody said Laremy Tunsil. I don't think they're going to give Laremy Tunsil. What would this be, a fourth contract or a third?
I think it'd be a third.
It'd be a third. I don't think they would give him. So he's already signed two contracts with the Texans. I don't think they would give him a third.
They might check on a year.
Maybe.
You know, teams always restructure and things like that. But he's older too.
That's what I'm saying. He's gotten older this point.
The timeline is different with him than it is for the other two. The other two are in their second year. Like that's a very different timeline than the guy who was drafted in 2017.
Yeah. Speaking of Will Anderson Jr., one of those big three, he will be on Texans All Access tonight. So he'll be on with John and Mark, and you can stay tuned and listen for that. Will's always pretty entertaining. one of the leaders and top guys on this team. He'll be on right after us from 6 to 7. Will Anderson will be on Texas All Access, so stay tuned for that as well. All right, the Astros got back on it, and their season is now off and running. The Rockets' season ended yesterday, and it was their last game. They got a win to end the season. They finished 500. They won against the Clippers, who gave it everything they had yesterday. The Clippers did it. I mean, gave it everything.
Was James back from Vegas? I didn't get to watch the game because I was at Astros. Was James on the bench, or had he not gotten back from Vegas?
I think James was on the bench.
Okay.
Which is not good enough.
But no, they got the win anyway. Listen, it was a successful season. Yeah. 500, they had games down the stretch where games mattered in trying to get into that play-in. I think Ocho said it's the first time an 11 seed has ever been 500 or better. And they had a successful season. Coming off of what they did before, this was a success. There were some things that happened that you didn't like or you loved. But ultimately, it was a success. And I think the big thing to me coming into the offseason and then going to next year is not as much who they're going to bring in, who they're going to trade for, unless they make a big deal that changes that. But to me, Adam, the big thing is we saw this a stretch where this was the best we've seen Sengun. Like borderline all-star level, right?
Had a case.
But he played the best he's played. We saw him a couple of times just absolutely control and win the matchup multiple times against that freak in San Antonio. Give him problems. We watched him have a big, big year at times and stretches. Then when he got injured, we watched Jalen Green have the most consistent, and to me, I'll speak for myself, real believable stretch that we've ever seen him have in this stretch as the games really mattered and he got and was a leading force to them being in the mix at the end for the 10th seed. When they played together, Sengun seemed to really flourish, but not Jalen Green, and we didn't see the flourish from Jalen Green until Sengun had the ankle injury. I think the biggest thing to me, Adam, is how they coexist and play together. How do you get this Jalen Green we saw without Sengun and this Sengun we saw with Jalen Green? How do we get those two together?
Yeah, and I think
The biggest question.
Yeah, and I think it's Jalen Green who's got to figure out, okay, when Sengun is on the floor and when we're playing through him, how can I impact the game? Because I think that he has had trouble kind of in that backseat role, because Sengun is the guy who led them in touches. Now, when I don't have the ball as Jalen Green, how am I going to impact things? And I think part of it is if he can improve his shooting and become a more consistent three-point shooter, that's going to make that team better, because Sengun draws so much attention, whether he's at the elbow or he's in the post. He draws so much attention that you're going to get looks, and he's going to be able to find you. He's a good enough passer to where he can find open shooters. You have to be able to convert when you get those opportunities. The other thing that Green needs to be able to, and Green's got to become a better finisher, because again, he can cut to the basket and Shingun's going to get him the ball. But again, he has to be able to make good on those opportunities. The other thing that Jalen Green needs to be able to do, when you have opportunities to run, go. You don't have to wait for Alpi to get back. Just take off and go and try and get early offense that way. Now, if the transition opportunity gets stopped, then wait for Sengun to come down and then start running your half court offense. But there are ways that they can play. They have played well together, but you haven't seen Jalen Green play at that elite level when they've been together. And that's what he's got to figure out. To me, that's on the players, where they have to be able to figure out how to put themselves in that position. Ime Udoka and the rest of that coaching staff can say, hey, we need to do this, we need to do that. But at the end of the day, they have to be able to execute that plan.
See, his talent is not to this level right now. Or not. Check that. Let me roll that back. Not that his talent is not to this level. His play just hasn't been to this level. But I think one of the biggest changes we saw from the Minnesota Timberwolves, a team that was an 8 seed in the play-in last year that got swept by the Denver Nuggets to they were flirting with the number 1 seed until the last game of the regular season and a top 3 seed. And they really, to be honest, I bet you they spent as many days in first place as damn near as anybody in the Western Conference. Is that team, and I feel like a lot of it was not just the coaching, but it was also Ant. That team stopped going through Karl Anthony Towns and started going through Ant. Now, Karl still was able to play, but Anthony Edwards became the person where you knew it was kind of going through. And I think they took off better because, I said this earlier, but Karl Anthony Towns, this team is much better. The Timberwolves is, and I think the Rockets will be too, is much better if Anthony Towns is forced to have to play out of Anthony Edwards' world. And I think this team, because Jalen Green is the more talented of the two, this team would play better if Jalen Green is always aggressive. So that's the deal. When Shingun, I think you explained it, like you don't have to tell Anthony Edwards to run. He doesn't, like, now I think before, he maybe thought like, well, maybe I need to wait on Rudy or wait on Carl. No, he knows it's his. Like, Jalen Green should always have a certain level of aggression. That doesn't mean you shoot it every time, but he should have a certain level of aggression and should feel comfortable doing anything because it is running through him. And I think that is we talk a lot about maybe the comp to Denver, but maybe that one is it a lot coming into next year of that team really took off because it became more the mold of Edwards as opposed to Karl Anthony Towns. And I think he's got to find a way to play with the same level of aggressiveness with him on the floor because I think the Rockets are better if Şengün is living in his world and playing off of him.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, you're not going to disagree with me here, Adam. No, I'm you not, son of a gun. No.
I don't know what the answer is. I'll be honest.
I just gave it to you.
I don't know if because.
That was a little much.
Because Şengün, because they have run everything through Şengün.
It's not working. To them at their best. It's not.
I don't know yet. I don't think that they need to do a 1-2. I think that they can do just 1-1. And they can both be. And to be honest with you, they have other guys too. Like I think you got to throw Amen Thompson into this conversation because if he figures out the shooting thing, he's going to be a star.
Sure.
And he could wind up having the highest ceiling out of all of them.
But he also may be the person handling the ball. He may be the starting this thing out. But, like, his ceiling, like, next year, like, he could, but I don't think he's just going to be the guy taking off like that. And I think you're going
to
probably
shoot. Ooh, boy, if
I think you're going to run things between those two. Anyway, going into it, I just for me, he can't and I thought you mentioned and you I know you cover this team and watch him all the time as much as anybody. He should never be in a point of should I run?
It should like, always be takeoff.
I'm telling you, the game for me, Spo and Tyler, that changed it for me with Jalen Green was that OKC game. Were now obviously, you know, Shea wasn't playing, but still, it was a meaningful game. They go to overtime. Hell, I think they went to double overtime. And he came through and not just made plays, but also facilitated and got open shots for. I specifically remember him getting threes for Jabari Smith in that game that really helped him out. He needs to be playing at that level.
That's what changed for them after the All-Star break. And it happened before Şengün got hurt. But they were one of the slowest teams in terms of pace in the NBA. And then once the All-Star break came around, they were one of the fastest teams in the NBA when it came to pace. That's what they have to be able to do more consistently. Try and get early offense in the shot clock. And if things slow down, you have the center to dump it into.
Yeah, yeah. They got to figure out a way. Trading Şengün is just insane to me.
I wouldn't trade anybody. Let this group grow together. Unless there's like a Luka Doncic who becomes available on the trade market, keep this group together and give them another year.
Yeah, Texans All Access behind us. Will Anderson Jr., stay tuned for that. And then following that, Area 45, they got you from 7 to 11. they'll do the Astros postgame show. Whew, come on, Spencer. It's got to be better than that last time. They need a big start from him tonight. Adam, great job as always when you come on, help us out. Tyler, great job as always. Clint, he'll join us back tomorrow. I am Ron Hughley as always. Houston, we love you, baby. He's not wheelbarrowing. Like, I just
I didn't know that's what I was thinking of.
I can
of.
See it in your eyes. I know you. He's not squats.
He's European, so.
Great point.
Stop
it. No, great point. They do stuff across the pond in the sheets that some Americans have never thought of.
Idiot said across the pond.
Guy's been to the UK, and that was across the pond.
Wow.
The Eiffel Tower? That's not just a nickname for JP France people.
My legs have never been stronger.
Just one look at you.